You've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Hello, hello. Tamara here, your host and founder of Launch Street. Go check out our website. Go to launchstreet.com, G-O-T-O, launchstreet.com. We have a ton of tools to help you make innovation a part of who you are and what you do. Actually, I said that wrong. You're already innovative. All we do is have the tools to help you unlock that inside of you. Unlock your greatest competitive advantage. All right, peeps. We talk a lot about idea generation, and it's important, but so is your ability to communicate that idea. It's kind of like running a marathon, right? You wouldn't stop halfway and just be done. I mean, if you started the marathon to begin with, right? You got to go the whole way. Part one for this innovation marathon is idea generation, but part two is getting buy-in. And if you're tired of hitting that brick wall of no buy-in, then listen up, because today's podcast is all about removing that barrier with effective communication. So our guest on Inside Launch Street, Joel Schwartzberg, has been teaching effective presentation techniques to clients, including American Express, Blue Apron, and the Brennan Center for Justice since 2006. And he has an award-winning book, Get to the Point, Sharpen Your Message and Make Your Words Count. We dig into some of the great methods he has in that book. So today, we're going to make our messages count and get buy-in for our ideas. Let's do this. Joel, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to the conversation. I'm hoping I can be as concise and to the point as you need me to be.
Thank you, Tamara. I appreciate the opportunity as well. And I also hope to be concise and to the point. We're all on a journey.
That's right. That's right. So since we haven't met yet, what's the one thing people would be surprised to learn about you?
Well, the one thing people would probably most be surprised or at least entertained by is that I was a Wheel of Fortune contestant back in 1990 when I was living in Los Angeles. And when you live in Los Angeles and you're out of work, you know, you think you look for a job, but out there you audition for a game show.
Okay, so what phrase or sentence or word, whatever it is, got you either to win or off the show? Do you remember?
Absolutely, because it haunts me to this day. It's a little complicated. It was a before and after, like Burt Reynolds rap. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you what it was. It was X marks the spot remover.
Oh.
And we, the three of us on stage, not including Pat or Vanna, we had a devil of a time figuring that one out. And I was very close, but the X, this one word, one letter word, really tripped us up, and it took us a long time. And I was about one spin away from getting that. And I probably would have won the entire show had I gotten that one letter right.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I'm so impressed that you were on it. I mean, I used to love that show as a kid. I used to watch it all the time. And I cannot tell you the number of times that I was in your shoes, but just watching. And I thought, I have no idea. And had I just put the letter B or L in it, yeah, the whole thing would have made sense.
So easy when you're playing from home.
Right? Right. Yeah. Which I think is a little bit like life. Like, had I only just looked at that a little bit differently, I would have figured it out. So on that note, let's dig in. Why is being clear and to the point so important to your communication, especially when it comes to innovation?
Well, one reason is that our audience usually has a set amount of time or a very little amount of time. So, you know, often we talk about elevator pitches, which is the amount of time between floors 3 and 5 to explain your big point to a big gun or someone you want to impress. So because there's that limited amount of time, it's important to get to the point, because if you're all icing and no cake, then you'll never deliver the actual goods. But the other reason is people generally have short attention spans, and they need to understand the driving force or the big piece of value behind what you're presenting early. This is not a movie where it's a spoiler and you don't want to put it out there early. You need to leave that interaction with that message having been not only delivered but received. And the best way to do that is to boil it down to its clearest, its simplest, and its most impactful essence.
So I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but You know, when I think about the elevator pitch, even that in some ways feels too long these days, you know, relative to people's attention span. So how do you know what's important enough to keep in your point or your communication? And what's all that fluff that we, I think we layer on that's just right. unnecessary for the person we're talking to? And again, I feel like I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but...
No, that's right. Yeah. We're jumping right to the point, which is what we're talking about.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So good job, Tamara.
Thank you.
Well, you know, what I often say is that the biggest flaw that a communicator, whether that's through writing or speaking or what have you, makes is that they don't really know what a point is, and thus they don't have one. People are confusing points for topics, for themes, for titles, for ideas, sometimes catchphrases, and none of those are points. Now, if you don't have a point, of course, you're pointless. And that's the reason people ramble, or that's the reason people have filler words or filler topics or tend to go way off topic, because they don't know their point. Not because they're not a good writer or a good public speaker. They just didn't go in what is actually a point. So it's only when you know what your point is that you can begin that boiling down process. And that's what I call sharpening the point. Removing words, certainly, but also distilling it to its most valuable essence. Like at the end of the day, a nonprofit organization, for example, their final goal is not bringing more visitors to their website. Their final goal is changing the world. But a lot of communicators don't say that explicitly. They focus on shorter term goals, or they focus on lesser objectives. And that's when you're not really getting to your point. And that's when you're adding sort of fluff. And the final thing I want to answer your question is, we often think a communication is like a Christmas tree. The more ornaments I add to it, the better it is, because I'm loading it up with ideas. But when you do that, all those ideas, they just compete with each other. So that's why it's so important to find out the one that's most important and drive that and drill it home. Because an audience at the end of the day, especially an audience to a verbal communication or a speech, they're really only going to take away one or two, or maybe at the most three ideas. So you need to know what those ideas are ahead of time.
So let me ask you this then, Joel. So how do I pull out all those extra ornaments that are unnecessary? Because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but actually, let me just say this. This is what I know I struggle with. So I'm putting something down on paper because I want to communicate a point, whether that's in a meeting or from a stage or, you know, to a group of people or even like two decision makers. And I list out everything that I need to tell them because I think it's important. It's important to me.
Right.
But it doesn't mean it's important to them. So how do I take this list of all the things that I think are so important and distill it down to the stuff that really matters?
Right. Well, the first is to actually prioritize all those things and ask yourself this question. If my audience can only take away one piece of information, what would that be? And if I nail it, if I nail that communication, if I do everything right, how will their mind change or what will they do next as a result? But there's even a larger pitfall to, I have 10 ideas, how do I know the right one? And that is to know the difference between an idea and a point. And in the over 10 years I've been sort of teaching public speaking and strategic communication, I wanted a test, a pass-fail test, to give to people to say, all right, here's your idea. Is it a point or not a point? And I developed this, and it's been pretty successful, I'll go ahead and say, and it's called the I Believe That test. Basically, you take what you think is your idea, the one idea you want the audience to digest and take with them, and you put the words, I believe that, in front of it. And you ask yourself a very simple question. Is this a complete sentence? Would my fourth grade language arts teacher see this and say, this is not a fragment, this is the real deal, check plus? If it is, you can move on to sharpening that point. If it is not, you need to reimagine it. So for example, you can't say, I believe that podcasting. You can't even say that I believe that the value of podcasting. Because in those two sentences, the first one, you're not assigning any value. Yeah, you're not saying anything. In the second one, the value or the importance of podcasting, why is it important? Why is it valuable? So this test forces you to say, I believe that podcasting is the most effective way to reach a millennial audience, or whatever, you know, your ultimate final value proposition is. Then you have the very beginning of a point. You could also use sort of keywords and what I call shortcut words or paraphrases like recommend, suggest, and propose. these will shortcut you to a point because now you're actually in the business of conveying something of value. I propose this. I recommend this. I suggest that. So these are ways to get you from an idea or a topic or a theme to an actual point and an argument. And only points and arguments have impact.
Why is that? I know it sounds like an assumptive question or a naive question, but why?
It's because your audience wants something of value. When you describe an idea, I'm going to give you a book report on my life in podcasting. You're kind of throwing something out there and you're saying, all right, here's some content. Maybe we could talk about it or around it. We're just talking about it. And maybe I'm going to cross my fingers. You'll take something of value away from it, hopefully. That's what you're doing when you're putting forth an idea or a theme, or like I said, when you're describing or giving a book report. But when you're actually making an argument, when you're actually making a point, you're giving a piece of value to someone. You're not just putting it out there and hoping for the best. You're packaging it in such a way that they could take something from it. And one of the best metaphors of this is imagine a book. Imagine the difference between the table of contents and the blurb on the inside cover or on the back. One is describing the inventory, just sort of putting it out there, but the other is actually selling. And I'll tell you something, Tamara, I say this often. If you have an idea that you want to get across, you are in sales. We sometimes think that the only people in sales are the ad marketing team or the advertising team or the sales team. But actually, everyone with an idea is in sales. And you are not doing that idea the best justice if you're just sharing it. You need to sell it. And that means turning it into a point with impact.
So for launch readers out there listening, really pay attention to what Joel is saying about sharing versus selling. And in fact, I'm glad you brought it up because that was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the podcast. Because a lot of our launch readers out there are innovators, whether they work inside companies or for themselves. And what they're ultimately needing to do is not just come up with ideas, but sell those ideas.
Right.
And I'm 100% with you. I think there's a lot of sharing happening. So will you give us an example so that we can really kind of bring it home with this point? And like really walk us through an example where you're selling versus sharing so that we can see the difference.
Right. I mean, I'll give you a classic model that we've all heard of, you know, sell me this pen. And so the wrong answer, if you give a pen to someone and says, sell me this pen, the wrong answer is the description of it, right? Oh, it's blue, it writes, it has ink. And the right answer is all about, you know, we talk about this in terms of features and focusing on features. This is now a tool of expression. This pen can empower you to share your ideas in a meaningful way. So that's sort of the metaphoric approach. But another example I like to give is of my son. So let's say he's writing a report on the American Revolution. He's only sharing an idea if he talks about the history of the American Revolution or the state of our democracy today. He's not actually proposing an idea until he says the American Revolution brought about the democracy that we enjoy today. Now, let's say you're in a nonprofit and you're trying to make the world a better place or trying to make the world green. You are just sharing the idea if you're giving a lot of statistics, a lot of interesting pictures, even a lot of description of the problem. But you are not in the business of selling until you're actually proposing the solution and explaining why that works and explaining how everyone in your audience can be a participant and an actor in that evolution. I see, and I'm sure you see, and I'm sure plenty of people in your audience see all the time, these book reports. Here's the problem, or here is the sector of our company that we're looking at. We have this many people. We're moving into these new industries. We have these new approaches. Thank you very much.
Totally.
And it's leaving out the most vital aspect. And you know what's interesting, Tamara, is that this happens a lot in storytelling. So storytelling is a big deal, right? You can go to entire conferences now that talk about the importance of telling a story toward getting your idea across to an audience. But it's not the story that's important. The story is the share. It's what happens after the story. If you do not say or write these words, this story illustrates how, or this story is a great example of why we must, then that story has no value to you. Then you're only entertaining your audience. So I always say the story is great, but you're not doing it justice. You're not actually turning it into something valuable until you explicitly say why it is an illustration of the point you're making.
You know, I was just taking notes as you were talking. So tell me if I've summed this up right, Joel, but it seems to me that sharing is kind of facts, description, historical content, but selling is really about impact, actions, and solutions. And I love that distinction, if I got that right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we did a video recently on our blog that our listeners can go look at called Information to Insights. And it's like, on one hand, sharing is information. On the other hand, the insights is where the value and the magic is. And that's it feels like we skip that. We stick with the information and then we expect the people on the other side of the table or in the audience, wherever they are, to build that bridge between the information and the impact. Where it's almost lazy. We're asking them to do the work, and that's too much work for people to do, no matter how smart you are.
When you're an expert and you're an executive and you're the communicator, the onus is on you to make sure that that message is being received, not on the person receiving. And this is also a great professional development tool. I have people reporting to me, and often they would bring to me status reports and information. And I would turn to them and say, all right, that's very interesting. What do you recommend? And I would say it each time. And you know what, Tamara? After a while, they would come to me, they would give me the data report or, you know, the where things are. And then they would begin to say, and here's what I recommend. And here's what I suggest. And you and I know, and your audience knows, those are leadership qualities. When you go from the information to the thing you're suggesting and recommending, that's what a leader does. So it's just peripherally, that's a great professional development tool, getting your direct reports to not just give data and share information, but to make recommendations, to put themselves out there.
So I loved your book, which for the audience out there, and we'll put a link in the show notes, is Get to the Point, Sharpen Your Message, and Make Your Words Matter. And I believe I read this in there, or maybe I heard you talk about it too. Sometimes when I'm researching, I get jumbled about where I actually read things. Mm-hmm. But you talk about there's a certain way to open and close your communication. Will you talk about that? Because it seems to me that we get really – how do I say this? We forget that the opener and closer are the biggest impact points. And, you know, we get all jumbled and then we're like, okay, thank you very much. And anyway, I'm now getting jumbled in the opening and closing of my question. So Joel, you can help me. I think you know where I'm headed.
Sure. I mean, there are a lot of pitfalls to both the opening and closing. What we have to remember is at the end of the day, there is one job. And this often takes away a lot of the fear people have about public speaking or about having communications like this. They think it's about them and how they look and how they present and what people will think about them. But really, it's more of like a blue collar job. You have this thing. It's called your point. You know what it is now. Your job is to move it from point A to point B, from your head to the audience's heads. So knowing that that's the thing of value, you need to get to that as soon as possible. Your audience in about 20 seconds wants to know, not if you're going to be right or wrong, because those could both be interesting, but if you're going to be relevant or irrelevant. That's the point at which an audience is going to pay attention or break out their phones. So what's your biggest piece of value? Your point. So I always encourage the people I talk to, my students and my clients, to get it out there quickly. First, who am I? What my point is and why my point is relevant to you. Now, that doesn't mean you can't start with the joke if you're funny, or start with the funny thing your six-year-old said to you, or starting with the thing you heard on NPR that morning or on your podcast. But no, that's something to just sort of break the ice and humanize yourself. You're not actually moving into the meat of your piece and the point of why you're there until you're getting into your point. So the bottom line is get to your point early in the very beginning of your speech. I'll repeat that again. It's not a movie. You're not spoiling anything by getting to it sooner. That's the thing you want your audience to take away. So begin with that very early. Make it very, very clear. You could even say something like, by the time I'm done today, I'm going to convince you that XYZ.
Can I ask you a couple questions on that before you go on? So one is, what do you think really determines relevancy? Is it just the point itself, or is it the point in how it relates to you, the person on the other side of the table or inside the audience? And maybe you're saying them interchangeably.
Well, I actually, not interchangeably, but they are siblings and they are umbilically connected. So you don't want to say your point without saying the relevance of the point. And you obviously can't say the relevance of the point without the point. Now, any good public speaking consultant will tell you, you need to understand your audience. You need to know what they want and need from you. And that is certainly important. But then the onus is on you to package it in such a way that human beings can receive it. For example, I always say that an audience needs twice as long to receive your idea as you need to serve it up and communicate it. That means that we often think when we're communicating, there's a one-to-one moment. As soon as I say it, it is being received. And we know, because we've sat in audiences before, that's just not true, because we need to hear it, receive it, digest it, then process it. And that takes much longer than saying it. So that's just an example of how you need to focus on what the audience needs from you versus what you can say and what can come out of your mouth. So I think both those things, make your point, but also explain its relevance to the audience.
And for launch readers out there listening, I would say, you know, what I love about what Joel's saying here is that audience, when I define audience, I'm thinking, you know, your leadership team on the other side of the table, your team, or an audience of 2,000 people that you're speaking to, because either way, what you're saying about kind of how does it relate to them, get to the point, I think that all matters, which leads me to my second question, because of an experience I had recently where this was actually a speaker and I was in the audience, which is a flip for me. And perhaps I'm a little bit more judgmental because I do a lot of keynoting for a living, but I couldn't figure out where he was headed. And I'm all about surprises and stories and kind of twists and turns, you know, as I'm listening to someone, if I understand the point of our time together. And with this particular speaker, I could not figure it out. And my brain was stuck in this open loop of, why am I here? Where is this going? What am I trying to learn? So do you think that that's a big part of getting to your point early, is kind of calming that lizard brain to say, hey, here's why we're together today?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes I tell my clients, know two things about your audience before you even meet them. One, they're kind of dumb. Two is they're hard of hearing. And neither of those things may be true, and they're probably not true. But it gets the speaker to understand and the communicator to understand that they need to make things very, very simple for the audience. The speaker is well versed in this topic, so they can't fall into this category of thinking the audience is the same, which is something that some speakers and some communicators do. And then they also need to be louder. But yeah, you need to communicate that in a very simple way for the audience so they can receive it and make sense of it.
So that was, we were talking about the opener, right? About getting to the point, the relevancy. So I don't think we covered the close yet, unless I was wrapped up in my questions.
No, that's fine. The close is important too, if only because sometimes that's the last thing someone will hear from you. And that's a value because it may be more remembered than other parts of your speech. So what do you want to end on? You want to end on your point. Remember, that's the gift. That's the thing you want to leave your audience with. So end on it again. Sometimes people don't do that. And they have what I sometimes call last slide syndrome, where they'll even say sometimes, how often have you heard this? All right, so that's the last slide.
Right.
Like, I know, right?
And it says thank you on it. That's it, because they didn't know what else to put there.
My email address and my Facebook account.
Yeah. Yeah.
As if the whole exercise was just getting from page one to page 12.
Right.
Or because that last page ends on a piece of data, they'll say, and thus that it's 20% versus 30%. Thank you very much.
Right.
And they don't use it to actually reinforce their point. The third mistake people make, and a lot of people do not realize this, is because the audience needs more time to digest it, you rob your audience of that opportunity when you go, therefore, that's why this idea will change the world. Now I'm ready for some Q&A.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you mentioned the Q&A. I wrote it down to ask you if you didn't.
Yeah. So if you go to her now, based on what I said, you're actually almost teasing your audience. Here's my point, but now I want to take you away from that and take you to some much less important piece of business here at our meeting, the Q&A. I've actually robbed you of your ability and your opportunity to digest it. Or it'll sound like this. So here's why this opportunity is going to make us much more effective. Now I'd like to bring up our second speaker. Same thing. You're moving so quickly into the next piece of business. So, and here's another point. And I was thinking about this when you asked that first question about the opening. A lot of people think, oh, my job here is to be a great public speaker or a great communicator. And I know a great communicator is funny and interesting and maybe attractive and charismatic and tells great stories. And that's what we ascribe to a great communicator. But at the end of the day, that's not the communicator's job. If the communicator is remembered as being hysterical, well, what's the use of that? Unless the communicator's sole goal is just to be booked again at another conference or something like that. So what you need to do is make sure you're doing your job. That is not to come across as the best public speaker in the world, but your job is to move that point. which takes obviously knowing what it is at first. And a lot of people make that mistake. And I think that's why some people take you on twists and turns and funny stuff and beautiful pictures on their PowerPoint. They're thinking, oh, I've got to keep you entertained and make myself memorable. When all of that is really just burying the true piece of value, which is the point.
So two things I want to add to this. One is, you know, kind of what you're saying about my job isn't to be, you know, the most charming standing up there in front of my PowerPoint, but really to move from A to B, I think for a lot of us gives us a sense of relief because it's like, okay, I don't have to be the best storyteller and the best charming, land my point, pause at the right moments person. I need to think about how do I get my this group, whoever they are, from A to B. And there's just, to me, that seems very, I don't know, it gives me a sense of relief of like, okay, I don't have to be witty. I just have to do my job. Okay, right. I can do this.
And you're not comparing yourself to Michelle Obama or, you know, some other fantastic speaker that you've seen or heard or the CEO of your company. Because the truth of the matter is, and I say this to my clients all the time, no one is better prepared or qualified to give this presentation than you are. You went to school, you did the research, you got the promotion. Nobody in the world can give the speech or is better to give the speech than you are. The question is there a way you can give it so that it has more of an impact, so that you're expressing it more powerfully, to give your audience the best chance of receiving it and moving on with their lives in a progressive way as a result of it?
Well, and I think what you said about shifting how you communicate from sharing to selling will help you get from A to B too. Because I think the challenge with sharing information is that there really is no start and end versus actually trying to move through a process or move people to action at the end. Very different. So
It's not about sometimes people, I look at people's PowerPoints or their presentations and I just see content, 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 and content. And the truth is every page of your PowerPoint ideally is making a point or a subpoint. Everything that's coming out of your mouth is supporting the point you're making. Nothing should be out there to say, all right, here is a bucket of content and I'm going to put it in the middle of the room and do what you will.
Right. Well, and I think it makes it very hard for the people on the other end of that table or in that audience to go, well, what am I supposed to do with this information? It kind of goes back to, and I don't want to say it's lazy, but you're asking them to do the hard work. Years ago, just on that point of, you know, kind of what's on the slides, the reason I got to this kind of information to insights concept, which I don't think is breakthrough, but just helped me see the difference in impact, was I was leading a team. We were doing this big client innovation project, and we were at the clients and my team was presenting the findings. And when I looked up, I realized, oh my gosh, we don't have any insights. This is all just data. And I guarantee you, and it happened at the very end, the client's question was, what do I do with this information?
Right. And that's true for everyone. Like sometimes people think, oh, well, I'm the data person or I'm the human resources person. So I'm not the one with the points. It's everyone.
Everybody's selling at the end of the day.
Yeah, everybody's selling. Everyone has a point to make. Even the person who introduces a speaker, that person's point is to explain to the audience why that speaker has value and why they're going to be better off at the end of that presentation.
Yeah, it's funny. My speaker intro when I keynote, I changed it to here's what you're going to get out of it by listening to her and a little bit of my bio, but not a ton. It used to be just my bio. So I learned that lesson the hard way is, you know, people would zone out when they were, first of all, they read it in the program, didn't need to hear it again. You know, second, that's not what they came. They want to know, what am I going to get out of our time together? Which again, for launch treaters listening, I think is true in a small group and in a big group. And I will tell you just very quickly, going back to that story I shared, I used to think it was a win when someone said, what do we do with this information? Because I thought, oh, it means they're engaged. It means they want to take next steps. What it really means is I didn't communicate the impact and the relevancy.
You left out something big.
Yeah. I used to think it was a win. I'd be like, yes, they want to know what to do with it. But yeah. I should have come with that.
Well, I saw on LinkedIn someone, I commune with a lot of public speaking teachers and communication professionals. And one of them said, always leave your audience wanting more. And I thought, well, that's the worst advice I've ever heard in the history of communications. I mean, that's true if you're a comedian, but that should be the last thing you're thinking about if you're a professional communications person.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I want to go back to the Q&A because as I said, like I learned the challenging way that you should never end on Q&A when I'm speaking. But what I really realized is that actually translates to small meetings too. So here's what I'd see happen. In fact, I've had it happen to me with vendors and partners that I've hired to manage parts of my business. We'd come together and then they'd present what they think our, you know, strategic direction would be or whatnot. And at the end, they'd have Q&A and I would ask some questions. Usually I ask during because I can't shut up. But, you know, there was Q&A at the end. And then it'd be like, okay, then we're at time. Right. And it just, every time I left the meeting feeling flat and I realized, hey, you should always leave a couple minutes at the end to bring it back to your point, because no matter if it's one person across the table or 2,000, ending on that Q&A just, it kills everything. It's important to do, but it kills it, right?
I think it's, I would do two things with a Q&A. One thing is I would totally separate it from a presentation that came before it. So don't tie those two things together. So you ruin the end of the presentation by launching the Q&A. Make a huge chapter break. The presentation is over. Here's the big point. All right, now we're going to move on to the Q&A part. And at the end of the Q&A, to your point, that has to end with, all right, you know, I've been able to answer a lot of questions. We've had some good discourse. But here's the thing. Here's what I want you to leave with. Here's the big idea. And reinforce it. Act as if your audience is very likely to miss your point, even though you're doing everything you can, so that you take every single opportunity at the beginning of a moment, at the end of a moment, as they're leaving, to always keep reinforcing it. No audience comes away from a communication thinking, you know, that was a great communication or great speech, but she made her point way too often.
That's true. Know, I've never heard that.
Yeah, you can do it as often as you like.
It's interesting. So I just went through a level one training for CrossFit to be a level one coach. It's just something I love on the side. But what was fascinating to me about it, because, you know, sitting there in a group of 100 people listening to these coaches and doing the work, I'm also, of course, paying attention to how they're communicating the content because I'm curious. And I noticed that it was incredibly repetitive. And the stuff that was really important, they wrote in red, which is the brand color. And those two things combined made that content sink into my brain, into my body in 2 days in a way that would never have happened otherwise. And I never walked away from that, to your point, going, oh, they really didn't need to say that definition 10 times. Right, I walked away going, thank God they said that 10 times, because now I remember.
Right. And just so your audience understands, if you repeat, say, a catchphrase or a title or a clever, a clever idea, if you repeat that over and over, that will get annoying because there's no value to those things. Those are just icing. They're not the Christmas tree. They're the ornaments. But they won't tire of your actual point. So it sounds like the people you're listening to, they had the right idea. They said, if nothing else, we need this audience to walk away with these clear ideas. And there cannot be 10 of them. There can't be 8 of them. There has to be 3, 2, or 1 of them, because we know that's all they can really handle at one time.
And the way they did it and the way I've seen other very good communicators do it, it's the same point applied in 3 different scenarios. So you got it wasn't that they just repeated what they said, right? You wouldn't want to just be a talking head.
Right.
It's that they took
over and over.
Right. They took that concept and said it in the beginning, said it in a different application, but important in the middle. And then they did the same thing at the end too. It was genius. It was absolutely, I'm sitting there taking notes about like, here's how to do an effective squat and here's how to communicate. It's like double notes for me. Here's a question I have for you, because like I said, a lot of our audience and our focus, right, is innovation and innovative ideas. Sometimes it feels like when you're communicating innovation in particular, new to the world thinking, things that maybe you need to connect the dots for people a little bit more. Are there any other piece of advice you have to do that effectively?
As you're going through your speech?
Yeah, right. So let's say, I'll set a context. This happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's say I have an idea for a new process improvement that's going to really help the company grow.
Right.
And I need to present that to the 50, you know, business unit managers in the room. But this concept is something we've never done. I'm not just sharing stats and data and stuff that they've seen before. I'm asking them to think differently about how we do business in my process improvement. Maybe it's changing a technology. Maybe it's just who does what, whatever. It doesn't matter. Are there any things I should really be thinking about when trying to communicate at that level?
I think there are some things in the content and some things in the presentation that will actually help. On the content, a lot of times I won't see a lot of good previewing or point making in the middle or reviewing. By previewing, I mean, now, in this presentation, I'm going to talk about three things that all support this idea that I'm presenting, that this approach will be more successful. And then you go through those three things and then you can review them. But often I'll look at PowerPoint pages that start with history or effects or examples or tomorrow. Or, you know, the title is a fantastic place in the PowerPoint to reinforce your point. So look at the titles of each of those PowerPoint pages, or look at the subheadings or of each of your sub areas and vet them to make sure they're saying, this thing I'm talking about now is supporting my big point in this way. This is showing how people don't understand this issue. This is showing how the data supports that they will understand it if we take this approach.
So you're really reinforcing and helping them see what you mean by all this.
Yeah, this is what I mean when I say, imagine the audience is a little dumb because you're, and in reality, they're hearing this for the first time and they're processing it and listening to it at the same time. So you need to take every opportunity to reinforce the point all the way through. That's in your words, that's in your visuals, that's in your titles, and that's page by page. This is important because. So I'd reinforce it that way. Now, there are also some things you should do as a presenter that help support your point. And probably two of the biggest ones that I say all the time are volume and pausing. I've done a test for over 10 years with my clients. I just ask them to say their name, their title, and their point too loud, ridiculously loud. You know, in a way they would never do in an actual meeting. And you know what, Tamara? They're never able to do it. What happens is they try to do it, and then I ask the rest of the clients in the room, well, do you think that was too loud? They say no. I say, well, what do you think? What was the effect of that person going louder? And they say, well, that person was more assertive. They seemed more authoritative. At first, at the beginning of the meeting, they seemed like a junior manager. Now they seem like a vice president.
Interesting.
And all that happens from the application of volume. Absolutely for people who talk too quietly. But even for people who have a conversational voice, they don't understand that it's more than just people being able to hear you. When you increase your volume, you just sound more like a leader. And increasing your volume is a very actionable thing. If I told people to sound more like a leader, you wouldn't know what to do with that necessarily. So I always encourage a stronger volume. You'll just get so many great impressions out of it. The other thing is pausing. Not just because pausing is dramatic and it focuses people's attention, because silence always focuses people's attention. But pausing slows you down and it enables you to communicate with precision, because now you're putting your mind ahead of your mouth. So you're clearing the way. All too often, speakers and communicators, their mouth is ahead of their minds. So they're talking, and their mind is saying, wait, hold up, because I want to make sense of all this so the audience can understand what you're saying. Pausing enables you to slow it down so you can actually control what you're thinking. You can really arm yourself with your vocabulary, and you can make these points with precision.
Well, and I think to your point earlier, that gives your audience a chance to catch up with you too.
Absolutely.
Right. They need a little bit of silence to process what you're saying. And I will tell you, that's probably been the hardest thing for me, is the pause. I got volume all day, but the pause was hard for me because, you know, your thoughts move quickly and you're trying to get across a lot of information. And I really had to learn the hard way that I'm better communicating less and allowing for more pauses for people to catch up. And you know, the one thing I'd say is, you know, you had said the audience being dumb, whoever they are, I kind of have a little bit of a different frame on it, but I think we're saying the same thing. You know, I try to remind people, when you are communicating, you have been thinking about this, whatever it is, for months on end. Maybe you're an expert at it, or maybe you've been researching it, or you've, you know, it's been your responsibility to manage this part of the business or to share this thought, or you're a thought leader in it. The audience is coming in cold. So right. It is.
They don't know. Change dumb for uneducated.
They just don't know.
A little less pejorative. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I get what you were saying. I think we have to remind ourselves that they haven't been thinking about it to the depth that we have. So of course they don't need all the ornaments. Of course they're not going to catch up as quickly, because this is not their every, waking breath like it is ours, whatever it is that we're communicating.
Right. But that does not mean sometimes people hear that and they go, oh, then I'm going to spend the first third of my presentation talking about the history.
Oh, no.
And so that's a problem. We see it all the time. Right? First, I'm going to talk about how we started in 1932.
Falsely.
And none of that is point making. And it may support your point, but as I say to the CEOs I deal with, if you have to take an off ramp or if you really need to say something that's peripheral, get in and get out. Because then you're not point making. You're saying something that you think you need to share, and maybe you do, but get back to the big idea, your big job, which is making your point.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that. So before we close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
So the best place to go is my website, which is joelschwartzberg.net, joelschwartzberg.net. And the book that encapsulates all these ideas, and I'm very proud of it. It came out last year. That's, like you said, called Get to the Point, Sharpen Your Message and Make Your
Work. Yeah, it's a great book. And we'll put links to that in the show notes too. And Launch Readers, as I said in the beginning, the reason I wanted to have Joel on is I think half the battle with innovation is coming up with ideas, thinking differently about what's in front of us. But the other half is communicating to get buy-in. And I think Joel, it's sitting with me, that whole sharing versus selling, because that is, to me, was the game changer in my communication. I hadn't thought about it that way, the way you have, but I think for launch readers out there, if you can just shift the way you communicate to that selling side, then I think you'll have a lot more impact and a lot more buy-in for what you're trying to accomplish.
Right. It's like a screenwriter who has a great idea for a movie. It's worth very little if they just sit and let it lie in their head. They have to write it down.
Exactly.
So for a communicator, it's about moving that idea.
Got it. Now, what's the one piece of advice you have for launch readers out there trying to get to the point?
The one piece of advice I would say is to use this I believe that test. I mean, it's very sort of nuts and bolts, but it's also very easy. Take whatever you think your idea is and just put those words in front of it. That's one way to make sure you're making an argument, not just describing a situation.
So what's interesting about that, right? I'm just going to run through an example for a second. So let's say I'm communicating the change in the marketplace. So in our consumer behavior, if I said, I believe that consumers are no longer going to the store to buy their books, that doesn't, even if I said that, it doesn't really say anything.
Right, because you're describing the problem. I mean, often people say, well, in your presentation, you start with the problem and then you do your solution. The truth of the matter is that's fine, but you're not really making your point until you get to the solution. So your I believe that is almost there, but it's the second half of what you would add to that sentence.
Right.
What is the solution then?
So yeah. I believe that consumers are no longer going to the store, they're buying their books. So we need to adjust our online sales, whatever I say, right?
Right.
Like that's the missing piece.
I believe that this mechanism is the best way to reach consumers who are no longer going to bookstores.
Oh, that's way better. You're obviously an expert at this. I rambled a little bit. See, now, audience, you can see the difference in clear communication and rambling communication.
Right.
Well, Joel, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tamara. It's been my pleasure.
It's time to sharpen those communication skills, isn't it? Whew. Can you see why you may be hitting the no buy-in brick wall at times? Me too. I can definitely see where I do and why. So my challenge to all of us is to take one of the methods that Joel talked about and implement it immediately. And then shoot me an email and let me know how it goes. Tamara, out.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.